And then when it falls into that fire.
Good morning. Good morning to not only the members of Parliament, but also, when I say Parliament, both Houses of Parliament, my co-chair here from the MCOP, the Honourable Yamede, but there are also a number of other chairpersons here. Given that this issue was the intellectual property rights, I'm sure we're all well aware that this is not only a trade and industry issue, but in fact a matter that the arts and culture will deal with, science and technology chairperson, I already see the Honourable, trying to thank Corbel, sure I'm pronouncing it a little wrong, I apologise, but also the members from the department are with us this morning. And this is in the matter of a policy type briefing, an understanding of what is here. So no, we're not deliberating. What we will be doing is exploring the issue in front of us and informing ourselves a little better on the issue. I'm sure you're aware, those of you who've seen our program, that we will be having and holding public hearings on the issue. We will also be having a research brief from our own research unit in Parliament. So at this point, I think it would be wise of us to hear what is going on and for a little revision on the agenda. But before I do that, let me first say we appreciate you all being here promptly at 9 o'clock, if not before. And please accept my apologies. I was regrettably in a presiding officer's just an engagement there that went on a little longer than expected. And I do apologize for keeping you waiting. But thank you for being on time, everyone who is here and who was. So just a slight revision on the agenda. Clearly, it would not be suitable for us to consider the portfolio committee minutes of trade and industry at this particular point. We will do that at the end. So we will begin, it is now 9:20, on the briefing on the intellectual property rights policy framework. And at this particular point, what I would like to do is to hand over on the chairing at after tea to my co-chair, the Honourable Gamedi, who will be chairing the deliberations on the issue itself. So I hope that's quite clear. But let me look at the departmental delegation here. We have, for the benefit of everyone, maybe you just raise your hand. Will stand Ms. Zordwa Ntuli, the Deputy Director General, Consumer and Corporate Regulation Division. Thank you. And then we have Ms. Nomfundo Masete, Chief Director, Policy and Legislation, again, the Consumer and Corporate Regulation Division. And then we have, just to keep it all gender-sensitive, I expect, Mr. McDonald Nyetsi Tenzi, Director, Commercial Law and Policy, also from Consumer and Corporate Regulation Division. And of course, thank you, we have with us the Liaison Officer from DTI, Ms. Saraj Naidu. Thank you very much. So I would certainly prefer it if we would allow the department to make that what we call a policy briefing, because I'm sure you know now, you've worked with us long enough to know we don't have presentations here. We're not running a modelling agency. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning to the Honourable Members.
of both houses. We thank the committee for inviting us today to just brief you on the policy relating to indigenous knowledge. And I just want to introduce one of the colleagues that is here with us as well, Simpiwe Mbana, who's also responsible for IP policy and legislation in the department. I have a team, a full team today, and we're hoping today we will be in a position to give you an overview, but also to assist the members to actually locate the aspect of traditional knowledge system, indigenous knowledge, within the context of the economy, within the context of development, and why we had actually proposed this policy to Parliament in 2007-2008 financial year. Members will realize that often when we speak about intellectual property, it becomes a very technical term, because people start speaking about trademarks, copyrights, and all of that. And because these terms by nature are not easily understood by people, we're going to try and explain them in the manner that will help members to associate it with now what we are talking about, indigenous knowledge, traditional knowledge. What is it that we're talking about? Why is it that we think it's important that it must be protected within the context of intellectual property? So as we go through the presentation, and I think as we get questions from members, we'd also be able to clarify some of the things that members would like us to elaborate on. But we'll just give you an overview of the policy at this point. Members, honorable members, like I said, I think it is important for the department to it is our responsibility basically to ensure that we show the relevance of all our policies for our economy. And as we take you through this presentation, you'll be in a position to understand the trends in other countries, both in Africa as well as outside Africa, in terms of how other countries are protecting traditional knowledge, how other countries are protecting their indigenous plants, you know, things that are unique to their own countries, which is something that has been lacking in South Africa. And I think members should recall also that we are not introducing a completely new policy. In 2005, certain amendments were made to the Patents Act, which sought to protect traditional knowledge also within the context of patents. And that relates to areas of innovation, invention, those types of issues where, you know, traditional knowledge is used by companies within their own innovation. And it basically puts a framework for protection and also recognition of traditional knowledge that has been taken from various communities. So we'll also show you now why we are moving it now to apply to all the aspects of IP and not only in patents, because we would look at copyright, we'd look at designs, we'd look at trademarks, and how actually traditional knowledge and indigenous knowledge could be protected using the very same system. Because we already have a framework that works very well in South Africa, except obviously there are certain improvements that we may need to make in relation to how we enforce intellectual property laws to ensure that as much as we put the protection within the legislation, but the enforcement of it as well is, you know, it's real and it can be seen by people that you are able to protect it. But also members will also be in a position to have a sense of the trends, basically, which are necessitating that this legislation be adopted. You'll realize that, you know, previously, traditional medicine, for instance, has always been used, for instance, as complementary medication. But the trend now is that it's actually a very direct alternative. You know, there are people that just prefer to use traditional medicine. And you'll see that that trend is growing in a sense that that aspect now is getting more commercialized. And if you don't protect it initially, then the exploitation of it may actually, prejudice the very same originators or the very same finders of those traditional medicines. So you'll see then why it is necessary for the country to move towards a system that will sufficiently protect traditional knowledge
and ensure that we are able to protect it sufficiently. Members, I'm going to hand over to McDonald Meshitenze to take you through the overview of the policy and also just to take you through some of the background, basically the debate internationally leading to where we are today and what we would like the committee, the both committees to consider going forward. Thank you very much.
Thanks, TDG. Thanks, honorable members and chairperson. The DDG is set at home, giving you a background, but I'm also going to give you another background. Thanks. The purpose is to brief the committee as outlined by the chair, and this is the content, the background, rationale, objectives of the policy. Starting with the background, we are saying we are not coming with new things here. Intellectual property generally is a UN issue, United Nations. There is an agency called World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO. There is also World Trade Organization, which is not a UN agency. So other nations already, they use intellectual property. I will give example of intellectual property as a form of a trading tool for knowledge economy. So we travel and influence international treaties that gives rise to this intellectual property regime. So there are people who are saying maybe our policy may be contradicting international treaties. So today we are here to confirm that we are not doing things outside international treaties. So therefore, when we go to legislative drafting, we should be in line with those international treaties. It's a historical issue. There is what we call the Berne Convention of 1967. There is a component of protecting the performers. Whenever the performers want to dance a folk law, in 1967 already, they were saying, let's protect that performer, let's recognize that performer. Folk law of any other nation. Because these issues of indigenous knowledge is not peculiar to Africa. There is traditional or indigenous knowledge in Scotland, and women, jerseys, and the like. So, if somebody says hand woven in South Africa, whereas it is hand woven in Scotland, that will be misleading. So the Scottish already, they deal with these issues. So there is also a 1978-76 Tunis model as an example. The Tunis model was done in 1926 and adopted by Tunisia. This name, like Berne Convention, it means that that treaty was adopted in the city or town of Berne. So Tunis is Tunisia, the capital of a certain country. So all in all, this background we can read is to indicate the historical background where a traditional or indigenous knowledge has been put in a treaty and certain countries I think we are going to protect our traditional or indigenous knowledge using the intellectual property regime. I think that is the background which we are doing. So bullet number three, if I may pass, on this basis, in 1999, the Department of Agriculture, Science and Technology drafted a policy called the IKS, Indigenous Knowledge System. It was an interdepartmental committee. We served on that. There is a component of intellectual property in that policy. So therefore, that component of intellectual property, the lead department should do something on how to contextualize it within that policy. So the DCI formulated this policy because of that background. So again, in conclusion, you will note that WIPO, that Organization of Intellectual Property, in 1999-2000, established a committee to deal not only on folk law, to deal with issues such as design, trademarks, genetic resources, because another organization of the UN agency was not happy whenever they deal with an environmental issue. They go to a country, say like Thailand, South Africa, tropical region. What they found is that their researchers, their professors, they work with these communities. And that community has got a knowledge that can heal malaria, as an example. Those professors, they just run to patenting office after they've stolen that knowledge. And then patented it, and then they say it is owned by Professor so and so. And the community is just left behind. So that organization, that is I will tell you a name, Environmental Program of the United Nations, wrote a letter to WIPO, WTO, and Food and Agricultural Organization, wrote FAO, to say, please, whenever we do research with communities, let's appreciate and recognize their knowledge, their intellectual property. So we are coming from that background that we are saying our intellectual property regime does not per se recognize traditional knowledge. I think that's where we're coming from. So the DDG has already said in 2005 we were here talking about the Patents Act. To amend it, we will summarize it later, to say there are people who are coming poaching. It's no longer foreign companies coming, pharmaceutical coming to steal here. Even our own universities, the researchers, they work with our people. The institutions of government, they work with our people, and later they get intellectual property in a form of patents and the like. And they patent, but they don't recognize the local people. I think that's the rationale. Synthesis is a long background, but please stay with us. I've already indicated that industrial property, which is a trademark, patents, geographical indications, and designs, have already been used to protect folklore or indigenous knowledge. We'll give an example later. Trademarks such as collective and certification marks, let me pause and clarify issues. What is a certification mark? A certification mark is something like the wool mark, you still remember the wool mark, it used to be owned by South Africa, New Zealand, and Australia, because we produce a lot of wool in the West. So there was an agreement that let's have a logo developed in South Africa, and then so that whenever people see that mark, they say this is a quality. So there is a criteria, 5 or 10 criteria, to say it should be done like this and this and this. It's like cars. When you buy which car, I don't want to promote any trademark. Let's say Benz, just an example, you are assured that this is a quality. BMW, this is a quality. Toyota, this is a quality. As an example, sorry. So therefore, you need a stamp of approval certification. Like in the wine, you see certified. So there is a body which need to work on compliance. So this is owned by an association or a government to set those criteria. So it may be a collective mark, association, it's a collective mark. So rooibos too, as an example, our tea, it is only grown in South Africa, nowhere else in the world. In the Western Cape, Cedarburg, say, let me add Cedarburg Mountain. Yeah, Cedarburg Mountain in Glen Williams Village. So it is the only area where you can grow it because of the climatic conditions, because of human skills, the Khoisan and the Dutch descendants and then they start to work on that. They dry that tree, and then now they are exporting it to the U.S., to Germany. So therefore, the job creation is outside, it's not here, because we are exporting it. So tomorrow, maybe in the near future, what should happen is the other way around. We should process everything here and export. So we are coming with those examples so that it should make sense that... So geographical indication. The word geographical indication just indicates that this product is only found in this area. It cannot be found anywhere. It cannot be grown organically anywhere. So there is an attachment of a particular area. So a good example is honey bush, rooibos, but we have not yet declared it to be a geographical indicator. Why? We are not coming with those reasons, but we think we need to move to that direction. So champagne, South Africa was forced to recognize champagne, the sparkling wine, as a geographical indicator of France. We are not allowed to have sparkling wine, champagne, and the like. We have already agreed, but the British and the Americans have not agreed. So the point is that geographical indicator, we can declare unilaterally to say this is our geographical indicator because it happens here, and we talk to our trading partner to recognize it, and we export that product. That's all what we are saying. So is music, the folkloric issue, textile design. In some instances, the law of suppression of unfair competition has been invoked to protect indigenous knowledge or folklore. Preservation, such as recording or documentation and publication of indigenous cultural materials, if not well managed, can trigger concerns and lack of IP protection. Let me explain here. There are people who are going around collating information from people, whether it's pharmaceutical, chemistry, whether it's music, putting it into the database. Do you know what is happening there? A person who is writing that story may end up claiming that the content belongs to Mitenge. I'm just using my... Yes. Whereas that should not be that. And then there are other issues which we call them a trade secret. We'll talk about trade secret later. But all in all, what we are saying is that you are saying people should give you this information, and then later you steal, and then you say, nobody knows this thing, it is mine. And then these people don't have money to fight. It happens in the Gudia plant, maybe you still remember. Now it is in Alice, the Alice of next to Fort Worth. They are going to Britain to defend the case. They work with professors, British professors, and they rent and they patent that. And it is happening here in South Africa because we are one of the richest countries on genetic resources. Seemingly we are number 3 or number 4. So therefore, don't allow people to come and interview people, put things in the database, because they are stealing actually. There must be something, intellectual property therefore, can be stolen. You see, we are dovetailing intellectual property regime to cultural issues, probably, to genetic issues. So therefore, when you say intellectual property is cross-cutting, that's why maybe we have this house today. It's cross-cutting. You cannot compartmentalize it in one area. However, in the area of, say, trade, intellectual property, there is a regime. But for cultural purposes, you may have your databases in museum, no problem. But people are taking photos and probably are using a portion of that design, the ballet design as an example, and put it somewhere, say FNB Stadium for 2010 and the like. What we are saying is that if you use a big chunk coming from the community and you design a stadium like that, therefore, why can't you appreciate the ballet as an example? The rest we can, The rationale for regulation of indigenous knowledge, legal protection of indigenous knowledge should be considered in an inclusive manner and not as an end in itself. This involves a reflection on broader issues such as the respect of indigenous knowledge, the needs and interests of indigenous communities, the promotion of indigenous-based creativity and innovation as ingredients of sustainable development. I think that is clear, because we are reduced as if we are not innovating, but every day we are improving on those cultural issues, and then somebody is just coming and push and use it later and say, this is mine. The policy objective to provide a legal framework for protection of the rights of indigenous knowledge holders, IK. Empower communities to commercialize and trade on indigenous knowledge. To bring IK holders into the mainstream of the economy. As I said, intellectual property is just a trading tool. The robot example, the honeybush example, to benefit the national economy, to conserve the environment, to prevent misappropriation of biopiracy, biopiracy stealing of genetic resources, to prevent exploitation without recognition. We have already explained those issues. Forms of intellectual property. We have what we call patents. Or let me start by saying, some people will say this is not the best method of protecting our indigenous knowledge, because our indigenous knowledge is perpetual in nature. So this policy is confirming yes, to say yes, folklore is perpetual in nature. It's yours, or it belongs to the community. This policy is confirming that. However, this policy is also saying, if somebody wants to take part of the folklore, one stanza or one thread, and come with a contemporary music, appreciate the community that owns that folklore. I think that's what we're saying. And then that new product from folklore and some rearrangement will be in the area of copyright. The lifespan will be my lifespan. If I go to 1800 plus another 50, yes. The Americans now are saying lifespan plus 7 years, or whatever. So. But the basic international treaty, Vienna Convention, is 50 years after my death. That's all what we're saying. So, all in all is that the patent's lifespan is 20 years. 20 years, if I don't want to reveal that trade secret of mine as an Inyanga or Manga or whatever, nobody is forcing you to come to the regime. You can live with it. But the problem of this issue of trade secret, if somebody gets it, then you are not protected. So, but you can continue with it. Like Coke. Coke uses trade secret inside. It never patented. So people who go and work in Coke at a higher level, they sign confidentiality clause that they should not reveal. If they reveal, they are interdicted in court, as an example. So trade secret is okay. However, patents is one of the methods that you can use. The DDG talks about medicines that is no longer an alternative. It is not longer complementary medicine. I'm told 80% in newspapers, 80% of South Africans use traditional medicine, natural, whatever. Technology. So you patent them. 20 years. After 20 years, it goes to the public domain. Because the issue of intellectual property, you used to go say to the Queen, to say, I've got this, it can assist, say, in the AIDS pandemic. The Queen said, okay, here's the letter of grant, take it, I will protect you, but if there is a pandemic like AIDS, therefore, allow me to take it, and the nation should live on it. So that was the quid pro quo. But nowadays, it is only going to the private ownership, so much that there is no longer a social good, social need on the issue of intellectual property. So, in 2000, the Secretariat of the WIPO received, I've already described the issue of working on the issue of benefit sharing agreement, that whenever you work with a community, please have a benefit sharing agreement. Tell us where those genetic resources you got, you found them, and then tell us which community to work with. Has the community agreed? Whatever was recycling here, it is in our Patents Amendment Act. So therefore, we need to promote this act so that people know it. And then if somebody just come and research without revealing this, we are going to invalidate the patent. Trademark. People say, no, we cannot use the intellectual property because the lifespan is only 20 years. That's an example, 20 years for patent. But we're saying the trademark is 10 years. After 10 years, you renew. Another 10 years you renew is indefinite. So therefore you can use trademark to be in line with the thinking of traditional or indigenous knowledge. Because it's perpetual, as long as you don't forget to renew. So, whenever you see what the names of hotels, services industry, goods, clothes, we are not buying wool, we are buying that emblem. We are buying that emblem. It is a brand name, a slogan or a logo. Trademarks can be collective or certification marks. I've already described what is meant by that. And we are saying these issues have been used in many jurisdictions to protect cultural issues, in particular, say, in the former Soviet Romania, Soviet Union. They used this to protect their own cultural recognized symbol. So it's a hoibos. We are saying we can do that. Geographical indications, I don't want to repeat myself, I've already explained this. Geographical indications, we also term them GRs, and they're not American GRs, but these are just geographical indications. So therefore, communities, wherever they are, probably they have got their own products which they know, and then we can market them. We're talking about the domestic market. There is also an external market. In the external market, just in passing, you also need to register there. The question is, do they recognize our laws on indigenous knowledge? The answer generally is no, generally. Therefore, we may have to enter into what we call reciprocity agreements. Reciprocity agreements negate what we call equal treatment. Because we protect traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge of our people, foreigners can also demand to say, please recognize us, but there is a reciprocity principle which we need to take into account to say, no, I won't recognize you if you don't recognize me. So therefore, we also maybe need to amend our Patents Amendment Act of 2005. The French are very good at this issue of geographical indication, in particular in wine, in the area of wine. You go to Bordeaux, this geographical indication. Champagne, although they are fighting with the British, that is a geographical indication. Also South Africa in the wine and spirit industry, we have such. So why can't we move to another direction? Copyright lifespan, I've already described it. The book, writing a book, computer software, patents or copyright, and the copyright regime protects indigenous knowledge, as said earlier, the elements I've already read this in the previous so all in all is that let us use copyright together with the communities, derivative music like Mbube, I don't know who owns it. There was a dispute about Mbube. People will say it belongs to Linda Solomon. Let's say it's Linda Solomon. But I've got another view if we read this policy. This policy, if it says Mbube, is the folklore of, say, of the Bondo, as an example. Therefore, Solomon Linda should have written that song in conjunction with the Bondo people, as an example, and claim intellectual property on the byproduct, the end product, not on the folklore, but just using the folklore as it is. to claim that it is mine, that we think it is wrong. Designs, we talked about the Ndebele design being taken to be put somewhere, and then the functional design. This one is peculiar, although in other countries, like Thailand, they also have, when we say functional design, it's like a wheelbarrow. You may produce something that looks like a wheelbarrow or that mimic the function of a wheelbarrow. But if we say the criteria, let's use the criteria, you don't go higher to a wheelbarrow, but you come with something lesser, and then it's a functional design. It is in South Africa, it's a utility or patent. It encourages creativity between the lower and higher threshold. Industrial designs may be used to protect, for instance, textile design. That is richly indigenous. Something that meaning the function of the original design. These are examples. I can tell a story by just looking at Coca-Cola. Please, this is a Coca-Cola. We are not stealing them. We should have said permission granted by Coca-Cola. And then we are not promoting Coca-Cola. We are just giving examples. So, the bottle itself, or the tin, I see a design. The way how it is, it looks like, it's a design. Sometimes we buy things which are not so nice, but because of the design, the water now is nice, but water does not have taste. But because of this design, the way how it is designed, it attracts me to go to that direction. Coca-Cola is a trademark. Inside, there is that, what we call a trade secret, as an example. Or there may be a patent, as an example. Coca-Cola has now bought all these groupings, this byproduct is under Coca-Cola as a brand. So the container is a design mark, can, word mark, Coca-Cola, and then figurative, that ribbon. That is going out, it's a ribbon-like design, trade secret inside, copyright, the color, the combination. So I'm done with the issue of intellectual property by just looking at that. And then here's the story, I'm finishing here. A story that sometimes Coca-Cola was being liquidated in one of the countries where it invested. And then people were fighting, scrambling for the machines, the trucks, the money. So the CEO said, please take everything except the word Coca-Cola. So he was a man. He knew that he trades on Coca-Cola. You can go to any world, any country, and he will assemble everything. But that those cars are nothing without Coca-Cola. So we are just giving an example of the importance of intellectual property. Within the context of indigenous knowledge, we have this product. The legal options, legislative measures under IP regime, we are saying we should amend our IP laws to include indigenous knowledge, licensing provisions for IP, you know the Wudia plant, the Khoisan used to eat it, and then suppress hunger and thirst. So Pfizer was negotiating the licensing agreement with the Khoisan. So therefore, they got a license. If it works, it will be a big market in the U.S. and other regions like the EU. We should introduce provisions requiring registration of IP derived from indigenous knowledge. We have already done that. So whenever you go to the registration office, they should be able to say, this has got a component of indigenous knowledge, and therefore, go and talk to that community as an example. And then they may license you. We encourage people not to spend, like that CEO of Coca-Cola. Don't sell your indigenous knowledge. License it. License your folklore. License it so that you get the royalty. Perpetual. I think that's what we're saying. Create databases to identify storage of these IPs. Legal options provision for the benefit sharing agreement. We have already talked about the structures for commercialization. If collecting societies, if collecting society is like a union, trade union, if you are alone in the employment relationship, you are not strong. You are strong if you work with others. So those communities should form collecting societies. They should know radio, whatever the name, Radio Gwala Gwala is playing my song or is playing a song of my member 10 times, 30 times. So what is the royalty? I think that is the rationale. Responsibility provisions, we have already said that this bill, this act, tomorrow when it is an act, you may find that other countries are not recognizing them, and then they're saying, but we have this act, recognize our indigenous knowledge, and they were saying, let's enter into an agreement of reciprocity. There is a need of harmonization of IP laws and other laws relating to biodiversity. In 2004, the Biodiversity Act was passed. There is a chapter 6. It has got intellectual property component. So the DCI participated there. And the Patents Act is saying, we are not going to give you a patent if you don't have a permission of the Minister of Environmental Affairs on how benefit sharing should be done, as an example. So therefore, we are agreeing that intellectual property passes to other departments. In agriculture, we have plant varieties. When the farmers are mixing the seeds, they come with a new product. They don't recognize the local people who have millet, which are drought resistant actually. And then they come with a product, but they don't appreciate the local community. So this traditional, the farmers, I come from Limpopo, the farmers where I come from, farmers in fact generally, these are the Afrikaners speaking people, they know traditional knowledge. They mix these things with our local people there. So we are saying, can't we share? That's all what we are saying. There are those people who are saying, come with a sui generis. We'll explain what is sui generis approach. They're saying, no, don't do this under the intellectual property regime. Do it under a sui generis. Sui generis is a Latin expression. It means it's a law of a special kind. In other words, you don't have a law that protects 1, 2, 3. Because we don't have such a law, come with a new law altogether of a special kind. WIPO, which I've already talked about, World Intellectual Property Organization, when it talks about sui generis, even to amend that Patent Amendment Act of 2005, we took genetic resources issues and then put them under the Patent Amendment. According to WIPO, is sui generis. So therefore, when you hear people saying sui generis, we should also challenge you, say, which one do you mean? In South Africa, we are saying we want to tamper with the regime of intellectual property. According to WIPO, whatever we'll be doing is sui generis. But the Latin themselves, if we speak real Latin, that is not sui generis. Sui generis is something which is special, over and above what you have. I'm just explaining the term. So, sui generis of the Latin terminology as I described, not that of WIPO, was not an option. The WIPO one is an option because we are tampering with the existing legislation. Disadvantages of sui generis approach, you go to culture, you insist that people should put in public their knowledge and everything. If there is no talking of the true legislation of intellectual property and cultural legislation, I can still go and coach and steal that cultural dimension and go and register something which has got a cultural component in the intellectual property regime. So therefore, it is not so useful for us to have intellectual property stand alone, cultural, plant varieties in agriculture, biodiversity, environmental affairs, science and technology say we are one government. We are one government. We must talk in one direction. So we drafted the bill. Yeah, we drafted the bill. We are not going to talk about the bill per se, but we are saying the bill should be informed by the policy imperative. I think that is the issue. So those policy imperatives, the public and various stakeholders, including legal experts of IT, were consulted, but we should agree that some of the experts come from the, there is the conservative, the progressive people. So this regime we're talking about is trying to be progressive. So some of the experts, if you hear them to say, no, that is not a good area, you may challenge them to say, we are moving to a new direction. Universities as resource institutions, they were consulted, and then they supported what we are doing. Government departments, arts and culture, cooperative governance and traditional affairs, agriculture, science, technology, international relations and cooperation, we consulted, we are still consulting. NEDLAC process was also followed to the letter. So a regulatory impact assessment, what is the regulatory impact assessment? We should weigh the benefits, we should weigh the costs. So it is assumed that there are more benefits, more than the cost. Okay, that is the end of our presentation. The DDG would like to say something. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. With your permission, I just want to allow Ms. Massetti to just clarify the aspect that I previously alluded to in terms of just assisting the members to also see where we come from and in locating what we're talking about within the economy of the country, within development, within, you know, the rural development aspects, employment and all of that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very brief. I just want to perhaps just emphasize the significance of indigenous knowledge and what it's intended to do in the space of encouraging innovation and also in terms of social and development and social and economic issues in some communities. That is, how do we use indigenous knowledge as a pathway for encouraging better social and economic development in communities? How can we make these communities enjoy this indigenous knowledge and thrive and develop so that it can also be enjoyed by the future generations? And in this instance, we then say we introduce the principles of fairness, that because they own this knowledge, you do not want the next person to simply use the knowledge that is owned by these traditional communities, and then they enhance that knowledge without recognition and providing some compensation of some sort, even if it's by way of royalties. So that is very important. But then, how do we provide, or what tools do we provide to communities to safeguard their values and interests as they use this indigenous knowledge? Because we can't just say they need to be recognized. There's an important element, which is empowering these communities to then be in a position to say, this is our knowledge. We need to then safeguard. What are the tools that you provide to them to then safeguard those values and interests and the knowledge that they should benefit from, the knowledge that other people may actually use and enhance around the areas of use it for herbal purposes. And I think also what is important is that how do we then use intellectual property to then to function better to serve the interests of traditional communities, because there may be various, McDonald's has on the various approaches. And also in the international arena, they are battling in terms of the appropriate approaches as to how do you then, as much as you recognize the significance of indigenous knowledge, how can you legislate around it and ensuring that you strengthen the protection and also you are able to enforce it and you are also able to empower the traditional communities? What kind of approaches can you come up with? In other countries, as we have stated, they come up with a special dispensation. But with a special dispensation, it's very important then to ask yourself whether it will provide the level of protection that you want, and also because some of the cultural issues, they've got intellectual property aspects, and then how would that intellectual property aspect be protected and ensure that you also provide the privileged individual rights of these communities to enjoy the benefits of their knowledge. So I think that is very important, but also in terms of that special dispensation, we need to then look at the advantages and disadvantages of that. The approach that we think is appropriate so that it can cover and protect the intellectual property aspect is then to use the intellectual property regime, because it will provide that level of protection and also cover the aspect of IP. I think those are the main points that I just wanted to mention, just to add the aspect of the importance of innovation and encouraging innovation, and also issues of social and economic development of their communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the addition has also proved very helpful. Thank you very much, DDP. What we'd like to do at this point, as I said earlier, I'd like to hand over to the co-chair here, the Honourable Gamede, and who will chair the deliberations. And the way we'll do that is the usual thing, we'll take three or four hands. What we would appeal to you is if you can keep your responses pretty brief. And on the side of the honourable members, I think you will have a chance for debate. So is there any chance of keeping your questions to questions without a preliminary party statement? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Co-Chairperson and Honourable Ngobo. You're welcome. We'll go straight for questions, and you'll pardon me, all those that I know, Honourable Ambrosini, Honourable Bob, Honourable Ngobo, Tundra, yes, Honourable Tundra, just help me with the same. I know you, but we are both diabetic. Was that's a big around.
My name is Marion Shun. It's SHIN.
Let me take I don't see the name here. Say your name once more.
Shun. It's H-I-N-N.
S-H-I-O-N.
No,
okay.
Double N.
Double M. That's the last one. In that order, please. Am I the first?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, a word of apology, because you're going to see me in and out today. I'm trying to attend two committees at the same time. But I've carefully read the documentation, the presentation, and even the bill, which is peculiarly marked secret, so I still think that I can speak to it. It's mismarked. Can I speak to the bill? It's marked secret. But being as it may, my question is about compliance of all these with the TRIP. I come here with a disadvantage of a formal education and intellectual property rights. And heavy difficulties, because the core of all this, when we boil down the presentation to what it's all about, it's about protecting indigenous performance and indigenous work primary. That's the IT context, and that there are structures to do that. Now, if internationally one was trying to get royalties for the French Cancan, for the Italian Tarantella, for the French, or for the Spanish Tango, and there would be an outcry. And the same thing in terms of narrative. There is a pool of works which are traditional, not the stories of the troubadours, the Russian stories, etc., etc., and those have never been the object of intellectual rights protection. So we are doing something here which, in my limited relevant experience, is novel. Is that consistent with the TRIP? Because if what you're putting before us is from the start a violation of a treaty, an international treaty that South Africa has subscribed to, we need to know. And I didn't see in the documentation any assessment of consistency with the TRIP. The TRIP is the treaty on the recognition of intellectual property rights. And there is a clause which requires not use intellectual property rights as restrain or trade and beyond what other countries recognize.
Another Mabat.
Thank you, Colin Chair. Thanks for the input from the DDG and the colleagues. The first point I want to make, Colin Chair, is that I hope that, especially we being a developing country, I hope that we will be able to have a way of taking this to early development stages of humankind, for example, at schools, because sometimes some of these innovative things come very early. I mean, sometimes said there's a certain age where people are at their prime of doing certain things. So that this innovation is encouraged at a very early stage, especially because we, being a developing country, have to accelerate our development so that very soon we must call ourselves a developed country. But that must happen because of a systematic way of doing things. Number two, at the industry level or at factory level, how is a worker's innovation protected to his or to her interest? I know one worker that works for a very famous international company who was able to design a certain element in their IT tray, and with that element that he introduced, the company owned that. All they did was to thank him with a watch, but not more than that was done to him. Those were in the 70s from Soweto. Then the last thing, my last question would be, when it comes to areas like songs, you tend to find that there are certain songs and stories that relate to geographic areas or to communities. So if a person is to take back or to, for lack of ways, in appreciation, what will the appreciation go to? Because it's something that's owed, the property owned by the community. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by thanking the presenters from the department for bringing before these joint committees a very important subject to be dealt with. But also the chairpersons who have decided that we must jointly sit together. It's very, very important. Thank you very much on behalf of my committee. The question of patents is a very important question for South Africa. The Department of Science and Technology has even established the agency called TIA, Technology Innovation Agency, exactly for this same people. Last week we had an oversight tour where we found that at Plant Bio, where we found that actually many of the people working around that area have a problem of patenting. What they do a lot of genetic work, not the controversial genetic work, just what we talked about, interacting seeds to produce new seeds with new nutrition. Now, what they said to us was that the problem is that because most of them are attached, this is attached to research, by the way, so they are attached with institutions of research like universities. And so now universities only want them, they are interested in publication so as to raise the profile of their names as universities rather than intellectual properties. That was the main important query they raised. That now, what does the government do, they asked us, what does the government do to promote copyrights rather than publications? Because even NRF actually promotes publications rather than copyright. And so professors and all these people, they publish, and they publish in peer-reviewed journals, and those companies outside overseas, then they patent these publications, and then we start buying the patents of our own making. My question here, therefore, is what are you doing about trying to capture that dilemma? It was a very important dilemma for us. That's my first question. My second question, there is an office called NICSO under the Department of Science and Technology, which is National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office, which was designed exactly to capture the promotion of indigenous knowledge systems and also to patent them. How fast do you work with that office? Thirdly, the chief director just gave an overview of the commission, the challenge in the commercialization of indigenous knowledge systems. And in fact, the United Nations, as far as I understand, in 1994, they indeed went as far as signing a certain declaration called the Matatua Declaration in actually establishing patents and commercialization of indigenous knowledge systems. How far are you working with that type of United Nations arrangement in promoting indigenous knowledge systems of the world? In particular, of South African indigenous population. And finally,
not finally, but what? There is a reciprocity agreement that you talked about. I'm a bit worried. I'm worried that, you know, then I want to know how you solve this worry that I have. But what about the country, therefore, that comes and say, we're not going to recognize this copyright provided you recognize ours, when actually it intends stifling the copyright, stifling, suppressing the copyright by wanting you to access something useless? How do you deal with those issues? And finally, I just want to get a clear clarification between intellectual property versus copyright. Thank you.
Another teacher.
Thank you, Chair Dumindo. Yes. My interest will be on employment of community. It's the issue that we are talking about today is quite a complex issue, but it may not be complex to other people that may have got expertise on it. How do you say, or who will produce a program of empowering communities on this matter, on this subject that we're talking about? I'm asking that question because our communities have been victims of people who will come to assist them, but at the same time robbing them of their indigenous knowledge. And so that's why you are here in front of us today, is because of that. But if I am, because she raised something very important, of bringing in the socio-economic aspect of it, and within the context of rural development. But those people in the rural rural areas, some of them, they are illiterate not because of their own making. Now, is there a process of simplifying this? But within that, also in the rural areas, there are traditional leaders who may also want to own this. How do you then? I see the whole thing. I think I've been covered with by some others. But in the center are those people that are to be empowered. The last thing, the comment, I think, I don't know whether you're aware of this, I'm coming from PE. There's a young boy who was told in Rose, they went to draw some things as young boys and girls, and he drew a sketch which then gave birth to that, what's the small car? BM, Z3, Z4, yes. That young boy was coming from PE in an area of Motherwell. It was just a thing that was talked about at that particular time. And somebody was saying, no, this child is supposed to get some royalties, whatever. If it is possible, is it possible for the department to make a research on that? I will assist. I found it very interesting when you're talking about this. I thought about that. Otherwise, Chair, I want to say it's quite an interesting subject. And how often are you going to come and empower us as members of parliament? Because I don't want some of us to say, I'm one of those people that we need some empowerment on this subject so that I expand my knowledge. But how often are you going to come to us, or are you only going to come to invitation? DDT, I hope you develop a program on that. Thank you, sir.
Well, I will see you,
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I echo the previous speakers who really raised some of my questions, but my problem is with the acknowledgement from local, I mean our own country. Because there are those who claim to be clever or cleverer than others. When certain of whoever can raise up something or invent something, I'll cite an example. From my area where I come from, which is Venda, there was a certain gentleman who happened to have a local radio station, not radio station, radio, he manufactured the radio. We could hear him talking, and then that person was sort of like, you know, discouraged to perform or to make such things because he was seen to be not qualified. It's like she indicated that that person, the previous speaker. So how are we going to sort of like eradicating that attitude of undermining ourselves as South Africans? And then the other thing is that, like you mentioned, the taking away of the knowledge of those who have those inside our own traditional healers versus religious practices. There are those who claim not to be recognized because I'm raising a racist statement, but that is the truth. That they are not even considered, like we have people who can cure AIDS. That breath can, I mean, you don't know what this thing is, it's all about. But traditionally, there are those who can cure it. And when this knowledge is there, they are sort of like discouraged, no. And then they take the very same knowledge like it is indicated here. And when they come back, they claim to be the ones who have knowledge who can do that. How is it? The department, like they said, the bill, is it not captured? I see that it was not even captured. So how are we going to empower our own people and be allowed to practice whatever they have? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I think almost all our questions are centered around the empowerment of the communities from the exploitation by the people who have got knowledge. My question is around that. How do we protect the communities with the indigenous knowledge? How do we do it as maybe this portfolio committee or as South Africans? In some cases, this indigenous knowledge tends to die with the person who invented it. How do we protect that? I think I fully agree with the previous speaker who said we need to transfer the knowledge to the younger generation so that it works for the South Africans. At the same time, I think I've got a specific question around some medicine that is known by the indigenous people of the Northern Cape. I was told recently by one comrade that if you are caught by some people taking that medicine, you are put behind the bars. I mean, it's the indigenous knowledge of the indigenous people of the Northern Cape, but there are these people who feel they are more powerful than the others. They can go to an extent of putting those people. You have to hide behind some bushes or whatever. They mustn't catch you doing it. I mean, it's the knowledge they've been having all these years, but all of a sudden, because some people want to utilize it for their own, what we call exploitation by the people who have got their knowledge. And actually, to emphasize and re-emphasize the point of teaching the communities. Like we export their raw material, and I think we need to make it our duty as South Africans to make sure that these things are processed here, because they are processed somewhere overseas, and when they come here, they are more expensive than they were supposed to be, even for our own people, for our use as a South African. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a couple of questions. Can we please have a sort of timeline on the process here, when the public hearings are going to be held, and when the bill is going to be ready? Can we have some sort of timeline on that? Secondly, can we have a specific example of where a university stole someone's indigenous idea and exploited it for commercial gain? Yeah, we're having sort of stuff that's sort of evolving into folklore here without, you know, perhaps any validation, and I'd obviously like some proof of that. I also want to know how we are going to actually determine who is the originator of the knowledge. Is it a person? Is it a community? Which community? Are we going to have conflict between one village and another as to who actually owns this? I see a procedure fraught with difficulties here. Is you're going to have a race to see who's going to register this bit of indigenous knowledge first. It might not be them, it might be the guys next door. And also, what protection is there for the individual within a community who comes up with a good idea and commercializes it? What is there to protect him from his idea from being exploited by the community? You think, hey, you know, you lived with us when you came up with this great idea, we've got a share in your profit. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll continue with the second round after the responses from the department. But DDG, when you respond in a team, we'll stress that we'll confine it to the policy, the brief on the policy, because we're still going to get a briefing, a data briefing on the bill for both committees. And that for the MCOP is going to be very important, because it's a Section 76, and will end up even briefing provinces. So, DDG and the team, in your responses, please try and clarify more on policy.
On a point of procedure on what you just raised, why is this a Section 76 bill?
Let's repeat that.
I mean, I've got difficulty in understanding why it would be a Section 76 bill if we are amending a bunch of intellectual property acts.
The department will also respond.
No, thanks. May you allow me to pick and choose, because there are many, some of them are related, but if one of honorable members feel that the answer was not forthcoming, maybe there can be a follow-up, but I will try to generalize. Let's start with the TRIPS agreement. We talked about the issue of United Nations having agencies like the WTO, like World Intellectual Property Organization, UNESCO, you name them. TRIPS is not. TRIPS meaning the WTO, World Trade Organization. But what happens is that the agreement TRIPS is just a combination of agreements coming from WIPO. WIPO came with treaties or conventions or agreements some time ago. If you go into the GATT system, there is a GATT system of trade and the like. Intellectual property was not a component. So the U.S. has been pushing to come with the issue of trading in intellectual property since 1947 or even before. So, in 1994, in Marrakesh, there was an agreement on intellectual property. After they have agreed to take the Rome Convention, if you read it, you find that there is a chapter on Rome Convention. There is a chapter on Bene Convention, which we talked about here in my presentation. There is a Paris Convention, Integrated Circuit Convention, New York Agreement. So it's a constellation of it. So the things which I was reciting, just to be specific, to say Bene Convention on copyright, there is an article, they talk about article, the French, not section. There is an article that talks to the issue of protecting a performer, the 1967 one. So it is within print, as an example, just to be specific. But all in all is that internationally, there is no international agreement that regulates issues of indigenous knowledge. Hence the protest by UNEP that wrote a letter to these various organizations to say, consider protecting intellectual property in your regime. So it is deadlocked at the WTO. So WTO is not negotiating this thing, it's dead. But WIPO is doing that. So in some of the areas, it's like saying, if there is no law, if the law is not saying anything that is right or wrong, where the law is silent, what do you do? You go on. So South Africa is a signatory of this international agreement. We will go on, we would like to go on with your permission, but without contradicting our international agreement that already talked to these issues. But where they are silent, we'll have to go bilateral. Therefore, this issue of reciprocity, like in India, Brazil, South Africa, we have a trade relationship. We are introducing these issues there. They are already introduced. We are talking about it. We can come with an agreement of some sort and protect, recognize intellectual property, indigenous knowledge at that level. Mm. So TRIPS, okay, we comply with it, there's the Bene Convention and the other issues.
Can I clarify my question, because it's not been answered? At first I was not clear. TRIPS is a specific treaty, not a paramount treaty. Berne Convention is not part of TRIPS. It's a treaty with about 32 articles, if memory doesn't fail me. So my question was, is a study on the compliance with this specific treaty to which South Africa is a party being made, and if not, can the next time we meet a legal analysis of how the legislation and the policies you're putting before us comply with the specific treaty. Thank you.
But then can we allow them to finish to respond, and then if they haven't covered that issue, then we'll come back to that.
Yeah, no thanks. In short, then we say we have international obligations, which we wouldn't like to contradict through this practice, which we want to. So that's how I will answer it. So if it is Bene Convention is there, that's my knowledge. If it is there, we comply with the TRIPS agreement. We don't like to come with something that contradicts TRIPS. But where TRIPS is silent, where TRIPS is silent on this issue, then the country is allowed to address national policies and go on. That's how I can respond to it. Other issues, they were on awareness, should start at schools. I cannot agree more than that. We should not start at universities. We used to have, composers of music, choristers, and for essay sport and the light. At Sunday schools, we used to have gospel music and the light. So maybe if it can be introduced at school, that we agree. It's an awareness campaign, and then most of the successful gospel singers, you may find that they come from Sunday schools. I'm not saying they're stealing, but the composers should be maybe the church. Let me also talk about this issue of employer-employee relationship. Somebody would discover something working for a particular company, as an example. Like me, I'm working in government, as an example. I'm using resources of government. I'm writing this policy, writing these laws. Who have got, in inverted commas, copyright? Where does intellectual property reside? My employer, in terms of the Copyright Act, my employer owns that intellectual property. Unless otherwise, it means if we have an agreement, like the consultants who are writing things for government, in terms of the Copyright Act, we own intellectual property as a government. Unless if there is an agreement to the contrary, if we can leave the matter there. The other issue on patents, TIA, and the like, yes. We work together with Science and Technology on the bill. Now the bill with the regulations, we work with them. Also NICSO, in my description here, we indicated that in 2004, the ITF police was adopted, which belonged to DAC and Department of Agriculture, Science and Technology before they were separated. So we were saving in that team. NICSO is a byproduct of that policy. And then I indicated that in that policy, there is intellectual property component. So the mandate of NICSO is to promote our traditional knowledge and the like. When they have science weeks and the like, we talk to intellectual property issues from our perspective. Meaning, therefore, we are collaborating. Coming to the issue of saying people publish, I think there is a problem somewhere, because when you work with intellectual property, you have a tender, you say, please, innovate for me, do this 1, 2, 3. You should be able to say, at stage one, there is a potential that I will get intellectual property. At stage three, there will be this type of intellectual property. It doesn't just come all of a sudden that there is intellectual property. We know that because we are innovating along the way. So therefore, if that regime is consolidated, it will be, TIA should be able to come with contracts to say, please, don't publish anything of stage two during stage one, because you have a roadmap. You have a roadmap. But this is still a problem, because people want celebrity, they want to be known, whereas the institution wants to own that intellectual property. So it's an issue of control. But the regime which is existing now, the professors are interested in being celebrity, going to address people, talking about things which are still secret. And therefore, we need to inculcate the issue of silence. So we need to balance. We are not saying people should not publish, no. We are saying publish after you have raised the whole stream where the intellectual property that may generate money for that institution or for government for licensing purposes. I think we need to balance the two without killing the other. That's how I can respond to that. There was also the issue of raising awareness. I think we agree that awareness to communities, those people who have traditional knowledge, they've got a choice of using their trade secret, not us forcing them to reveal things. Maybe if it is a patent, it's 20 years. But if it is a trade secret, it is perpetual. As long as they can guard that trade secret should not go into the public domain, and therefore they will no longer be protected. So we are saying, let's live with the two. It's a matter of balancing. Yeah, if I may say so. NICSO, I have already indicated that we work together. The issue of the United Nations coming with the promotion of indigenous knowledge, yes, we attend things via the WIPO Intellectual Property Organization, because it's also the agency of the United Nations. So is the ILO, International Labour Organization. They also help indigenous people's protection of intellectual property. So we work with them, we participate, but we are saying it's no longer a matter of promoting things. You promote, you gain advantage from it. But we use that to promote, let it in the public domain, and somebody comes and poach. So the WIPO founding documents encourages protection. So we work with them, that is the United Nations. The issue of reciprocity agreement, I think even in the, I like the Berne Convention. The Berne Convention itself, which is in trip, it also talks about a quid pro quo. You do this to me, I will also do this to you. But the TRIPS agreement also talks about non-discrimination. Don't discriminate people like us. If the act is passed now, we should not discriminate. Okay? Because your country is not recognizing our law, you as a foreigner, we are not going to do that. We can't do that. But we approach the country to say, let's enter into a reciprocity agreement. It is allowed in terms of international treaties. That's how I can respond to it. The issue of staffing, I think there is a rigorous process of examining things, how they should be done without staffing. It's a corporate, mind you, we are talking about relations between states, that is government to government. Like now, a good example is the United States is not a signatory or it is not a member of the Convention on Biodiversity, as an example. Biodiversity, when people come into the country, they should get the permit, they should go to research with a particular community for indigenous knowledge, as an example. But what is happening is that corporates coming from outside, they go to people, they give them money in dollar terms, and then those people accept, and then they go out and they patent, as an example. So even our people should be empowered that they should not cooperate with such people. So we are not saying people should not economically have benefits and the like, but at the same time, it's a national issue. This issue should not only be discussed in Parliament. We don't have resources, as the DDG will talk on it. Just to go on awareness for everybody, it should be on the nation. The nation should take it upon itself to teach each other to say, if you do 1, 2, 3, these are the advantages, these are the disadvantages. That's all what I can say in relation to that. Empowering, she will talk, registration, the issue of the BMW in roads, as an example. I indicated that people are coming and poaching. I don't know, if you are still working on something, innovating, preferably don't tell any person. Because if it is a patent, as an example, it must be new, inventive steps, new in the whole world, don't tell any person. Because if you go and register and I can prove that, no, I know about this thing, you want to get that protection. So therefore, that design and the like, preferably, the little boy should have gone public after he has registered it, preferably. If it is a copyright, it's another issue, but I'm talking about it's a trademark, and then I go and register first, or write copyright before you discuss with any person. Yeah, that's as far as I can say. I'm finishing my area. There is the issue of people coming here to export. We export raw materials. We export raw materials. When they come back, they might have research on them. And then, like rooibos, as an example, we had a dispute with the in the US on rooibos. Rooibos, we are drinking this tea. It has got patents. It has got this issue, sort of a trademark. The patents inside say it may be for arthritis, for promoting of breastfeeding, that means. So you may find that somebody has already stolen it, as an example, because you replace. So all in all, what we're encouraging is that please allow the process of innovation to be sort of a secret, a guarded secret, going to an economic empowerment, as the chief has already said. So from my side, I think that's all what I can say.
DDG?
Chair, thank you very much. I think, Chair, you've actually directed us properly so that we deal just with the policy issues. I think some of the issues will take an opportunity, I think, in the next coming days of this, to take up the invitation to engage the committees and committee members, because, like we've said initially, intellectual property is very broad. Some of the questions that are being raised right now do not necessarily relate to the aspect that we're talking about today, but then I think that we can engage on so that we can also see the relation between that and what we're talking about today. But what I'm going to do, Chair, just to broadly capture some of the important things that have come up, which I think are relevant for the policy. Firstly, the issue of reciprocity. I think members must understand it within the context of saying, in under normal circumstances, if there's an international treaty that countries are bound to, then the treaty will oblige the countries to respect the principles that are contained in that treaty and the duties and obligations that flow from it. And so it becomes automatic once you become a signatory to that particular treaty. But where a matter is not a subject of a treaty, then each country does an act on its own, then it becomes the country's prerogative to decide whether they want to recognize or they don't want to recognize. So for trade purposes, often we'll negotiate with our trade partners to say, please recognize the protection of this in our country. That is a way of negotiating. And then on the other hand, we will protect your own country. So we recognize your laws, you recognize ours. But it doesn't replace the need for an international instrument that will bind the countries. And I think the negotiations that McDonald was speaking about when he was giving the background, those debates were actually debates that are intended to lead to some international instrument that will recognize and put principle for the protection of traditional knowledge and indigenous knowledge. And once we have that, then the countries that are signatory to that, they will automatically be required to recognize and respect the laws of those countries that they are a party with. And so I think I'll leave it at that, just in terms of just so that you can see why the reciprocity becomes relevant. It becomes relevant where there's no treaty that automatically binds other countries to respect your laws. And in relation to just the where we're going, the policy that we brought to this House today, it basically says this is a framework that we're proposing for the protection of traditional knowledge in South Africa. And we are saying this framework that we are proposing, there are various options. People would say create a special law to deal with that. But having discussed this and consulted sufficiently and taking into account the South African circumstances, the proposal that we're putting on the table is that let's amend our intellectual property law framework so that it accommodates traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge. So in that sense, then, you are not creating a new law, because we believe that if you look at the very individual components that McDonald's was taking you through, if you look at the copyright law, you look at trademarks, you'll see that it's possible to protect traditional knowledge under each one of them. And I'd like members to also think just in context of this particular area that we're dealing with today. Think about it in terms of people would say that how do you protect it is not new. I think Honorable Tim was saying exactly that it's not a new thing, and how do you then locate the originator of it? I think to look at it broadly in a sense that We're talking here about traditional knowledge that often there's no question about its origin. The communities that have ownership over that are known. And also the geographical area where that can be found is also known. So there's things that are so obvious. Yes, there would be aspects where the line is very thin and the policy must direct us to say how do we deal with that. And I think we will also, you know, expect the committee to give us that guidance as well as we come here to present that, to say how do we then deal with the finer details that are not necessarily that automatic. I mean, if you think about the embedded design, you can't say, no, it's not an embedded design. It's no. You know, those are things that are very, very, very obvious. But also, we need to also look at it within also a context of redressing certain things that just went wrong. These are things that were never protected, and because the system previously did not allow for it or just did not recognize it, it then left it to the hands of people that would exploit it and continue to exploit it even now. So we're saying that there's some elements of it that could still be subject to protection within our intellectual property laws. And but I also want to remind members that the laws that Parliament makes on an ongoing basis, laws are not static. And as much as we've had these intellectual property laws that we have in the country over these years, we cannot make an argument that this cannot find protection under the IP law system because it's not new, because it's not this. If policy dictates that the law needs to be amended to then take into account the policy objective, then the law needs to be amended to take into account that, because the law must fit the circumstances and the needs at a particular time. So this is how we would like the committee members to look at this matter, to say, what are the circumstances that are prevailing currently? Are the laws that we have now accommodative of that? And if we choose this approach as an option, as we have it now, then we need to then ensure that some of those gaps that members could, you know, perhaps would find, or, you know, during the public hearings, people will point out certain aspects. How do we deal with those aspects? You know, but I believe that those will be a few aspects. And the other point, members, that I just want to bring to the fore is that it is important for us to differentiate between promotion and protection. I think what we are trying to bring to the table today is really the protection. You know, often when we go to international fora, you know, there's always talk about we must promote this, we must promote this. But then when we start getting into, so how do we protect? Then everybody says, yeah, but we'll talk about that later. That's the problem. Then you promote, and people start, you know, exploiting what you're promoting, and you don't have protection. By the time you say, but how am I protected? It's already gone. It's out of your hands. So I think those are the things that you were talking about the boy that, you know, created something. You know, you only realize later that, oh, but I was supposed to have done this. And in that case, in case of that boy, at least there was a system that could have protected him, but he didn't know about it. That's where the education comes into the picture. And I think we'll take this back very seriously, McDonald. I think as we prepare for the next presentation to the committee, we need to come up with a program in terms of how we're going to ensure that that happens, because it's very important. Because people would innovate, but if you don't know that this is something that actually you need to protect, you don't know. Somebody takes it, then you realize later. And I think practically, like for instance, people that are involved in presenting proposals to companies, tenders, and all of that, people come up with very great ideas there. And they will present it to a company and say, this is what I have, you know, can you partner with me to exploit and all of that? They say, no, we're not interested. The next day, you see it, they announce it, it's a big splash, it's a big thing. Because people do not know that they're supposed to actually protect it before they even take it to the next person. That's where education comes in. And we'll take that very seriously, just the importance of that education aspect, and just devise a way in terms of how we're going to ensure that we can carry it out successfully. But I would want to just want members to think very carefully about the level of protection that we need to bring into the picture. Promotion, I think you'll see a lot of the debate and deadlocks that take place in this international forum center around that area, where when you start talking protection, people start going backwards. Because especially for developing countries, Because when we start raising that, you know, nobody wants to get into that level yet, no commitment yet. But then as you promote, who's going to then take advantage of that issue, those issues that you're promoting? So I think we need to just find a very right balance in that area. And then just also, in terms of just the recognition, I think Honorable Mabasa raised an issue around, for instance, if there's a song, you know, that has been used which belongs to a community, how do you then recognize that community? How do you do that? Recognition is going to take probably different forms. It could be through royalties. It could actually be just, you know, for instance, McDonald's alluded to issues of collecting societies, for instance. You may contribute to a particular fund that the community has created. So as you use their song and you are promoting it, you're benefiting from it, maybe you take a particular portion, depending on the agreement that you've reached with that particular collection society, then you put that contribution there. But my take is that it will actually develop even bigger than that. There will be more creative ways of doing it. You'll find that communities will just say, you know, as long as you can, you know, build up a church, build up a school there, you know, they'll find ways of, you know, agreeing, you know, how the compensation should happen. But also it's important to note that in many instances, you'll find that people are not even interested in you giving them money. They just want you to recognize that you used their particular knowledge to do that. So some recognition is going to be just recognition, where you acknowledge that you utilize what doesn't belong to you to get the outcome that you are now exploiting. Lastly, Chair, I think the issue that we should not forget to bring to the attention of the committees is that when we took this policy to Cabinet, Cabinet did also raise a concern about what appears to be fragmentation in how these issues are dealt with. You know, agriculture has some elements that appears to be relating to IP, but it's actually not IP because it's other aspects. But then the IP aspect of it is very important because they are linked. And also DST on promotion of traditional knowledge, for instance, and all of that. I think what we would like to say is that there is no fragmentation. It's cross-cutting functions. There's particular aspects, components that actually together need to be talking to each other. So what we've agreed and what was an agreement to Cabinet is that the departments need to come up with a policy that is going to say how this will be coordinated. So that is the step that we'll be taking as government departments to ensure that there's a policy that will outline the area so that everyone can see what each department is dealing with and at what point these meet, because it's actually not contradictory but complementary. Thank you very much, Chair. I hope we've covered most of the questions that I have.
Thanks, Honourable Nawa, because what we omitted to say was that we're going to break for tea at 11 so that we time ourselves properly. So we'll break for tea so that we could have that fresh break, and then at 1:15 we'll come back. I already have two members. There's a follow-up. I already have two members who will start immediately after tea. You want to do a follow-up now? Is it going to be a follow-up?
No, yeah, follow-up. Just a very short follow-up.
Molo.
Thank you, Chair. What you've just said now, TDG, is that there's no coordination. But as far as I understand, the DST was chosen to coordinate the various departments along this line when this NICSO office was actually... As far as I know, DST was supposed to be the coordinator of this.
I'm not sure, but if you're going to be quick on that, maybe you could do it also and finish it over tea.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to say that what I'm saying is that there is coordination. As departments, we are coordinating. But I think what Cabinet alluded to is that there must be a policy so that everybody knows what is the coordination, what is the form of that coordination. That's the mandate that as government departments were given. So that is what we'll be working towards, and that's what we'll be bringing back to Cabinet and through Parliament to ensure that that policy is a policy that has been adopted and is known by everybody, so that we can go back to it. Right now, we cannot go to a particular policy and say, this is how we coordinate this matter. But we are coordinating as government departments.
Thanks, honorable members of the department. Let's pray for tea until Korapa.
What they may have done is to give us sufficient information today when they finish so that we can generate more thinking on it and then almost request them to come and expand in certain areas. So I think we will certainly take that into account, and I do see the chairperson of Science and Technology, the chairperson of Arts and Culture has already agreed that this would certainly be the case. And the person who's missing today, but one of the members from the committee may be here, is, I stand for correction, but I think is it Constitutional and Traditional Affairs, looking at colleagues just to see whether that in fact is the right title. But
it would be Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. If you want to have to
right.
Say.
Well, right. Cooperative governance, which of course is far more overarching than purely the legal concepts of constitutional affairs. Right. Thank you very much. So I'm handing over immediately now to Chairperson Gamedi to complete the deliberation.
Thanks, Co-Chair. Just I'm sure now we've timed ourselves at least by 12 o'clock. Honourable Smith is first one, after that Honourable, I'm sure Honourable Mutumi. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of questions. The first is, I wonder if the department could spell out to us a little bit more the consequences of the jurisdiction of the proposed bill in the regulatory framework. I mean, it's not an international agreement, we're basically going into load, it's novel, it's new, but what are the effects of it? For example, it will regulate what people do in this country, and it will regulate what might be able to be sold in this country if it comes from another jurisdiction, which we're not happy with. But it won't affect what other people do internationally. And I wanted to get some clarity as to what the implications might be for multinationals elsewhere in the world that are involved in what you might want to term fire piracy or whatever. And then secondly, also, one of the consequences of the jurisdictional limitation is, with a question actually, is have you looked at all the unforeseen consequences that might arise? I mean, for example, I see one of the provisions in the presentation we had just now was that a community would have to give its permission for certain processes to take place. Now, again, I imagine the effect of that is that would have a bearing on what happens within this country, but not outside of the country. So if certain pharmacological processes are taking a product forward, it may well be, or just conceivably could be the case, that we're stymieing research here because we're setting conditions here where it wouldn't apply to other people internationally. But that's just questions on that one. And then secondly, I know the DDG spoke that this is a bill about the regulatory framework and the policy and everything else is about protection and not recognition. But I must admit, I really fail to understand the protection side as fully as I should. And maybe it's because I'm not in your committee, I'm lost. But in the first instance, for example, the options you gave us, you got patents. Well, presumably, much of the indigenous knowledge system in respect, for example, of the medical side is not patentable if it's in the public domain. So unless, of course, as we do the DDG said, you just simply redefine a patent to include that. But that would then create its own issues with international definitions of what patents are. So I don't understand how it'd be patentable since it's not new and it's in the public domain. Trade secrets, well, trade secrets are there. It's not a form of protection. It's what you lock up in your safe. And if I find your trade secret, I can copy it. Nobody stops me. It's not protection at all. It's just how good your key is. That's why Coca-Cola hasn't been defeated by Pepsi. But if Pepsi finds the formula, they can produce Coca-Cola and nobody can stop them. It's not protection at all. And branding, fine. Yeah, okay, branding is good. But, Rooibos is only a brand name. It's not a brand, it's not the protection of the product, it's the protection of the name of the product. So I'm not quite sure what protection exactly we're looking at here. It seems to me that much of what you're discussing is in fact recognition and not protection, even though you're saying it the other way around. I mean, royalty is a form of recognition. Getting permission from the rights holders, you know, in fact is more recognition than protection again. So I'd like to see something concrete about what precisely would be done to protect the knowledge system. And then my third big issue is really this one about what is the community. I know it's a question you responded to earlier, but I still don't agree with it. If you take, for example, certain communities, they are very clearly defined. And if somebody goes running around the northwest Cape and they find a product, and you could say, well, there's a Khoisan community there that has a close, close affinity with that product, that's fine, that's a community. But if you go into CNA, you can pick up plenty of books which refer to indigenous medicine products, which would refer to, for example, the whole Eastern Seaboard. The whole of Eastern Cape and Cape Town would use particular products in some gommas and so on. Now, you're going to say you're going to now consult 16 million people to get permission for somebody to pursue that at a research level. Or how do you consult with what is not really a small, easily definable community living in a particular area? There's a large number of people that presumably are only a community in name, not actually in fact. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me also join the chorus by appreciating the presentation from the team or by the team. I thought I'm going to refrain from asking my question, but then this thing that I was taught that there's never a stupid question. A stupid question is that which is not being asked when I'm compelled to ask. What I would like to find out is the bill is aimed at protecting. But I what I find missing there is the record, what's going to happen to those that do not abide or do not comply. What is going to be the penalty? Or it's going to be sort of, okay, this so-and-so or these people or this company didn't comply, and we then wake up and think of the penalty. That's what I wanted to find out. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. It's just a follow-up question again. Unfortunately, because of the constraint of time, before the break, I could not then add the question. But I think the most important part that I think was not addressed to the extent needed is the question that I raised in terms of the competition between publication and patent. You see, we have an example there. You know, this is a conflict of regulations and policy, which I think we're all about today. The NRF prerequisite is that for people to be rated and therefore to be funded, they have to publish so much. And they are on that basis, therefore, funded and rated at top-class reception. And that is what is happening with a lot of our people out there in these institutions of research. Second, also, the departmental requirement for higher education is that professors and researchers in these institutions should publish, should add value in order that the department can pop in money for the further research to be done in respective departments. These are regulations and policies. Now, you just mentioned, you Chief Director, that for copyright or patent, you need to hide the information for as long as possible until you are prepared and ready to take it out. Now, that is a problem that we faced when we went to one of our institutions of research, where we found professors actually dealing with indigenous systems. they are actually interacting different kinds of maize to produce. But this was actually some of them that were done by our people. So they are, one of them, which was even saying that he was working together with another person who was very, after they had discovered that particular technology. And this one was very much unstable to public. And as a result, you know, he says he was trying to block him that we must patent this because it's a very important technology before we publish. But this other professor was so keen to be known that he's one of the people who has produced this thing, and of course also is going to be recognized by NRF and by the university. And he went right and he published. And so he got the celebrity that we're talking about, the celebrity value. Now, but therefore the patent was gone. One company overseas took the patent. So this is a very important matter of policy that we need to strike through. And so how are we going to coordinate that these regulations, because we were talking about that you are coordinating these activities, but it's just that they need some kind of documentation or policy, documented policy. How are we going to do it? Because there is a rule in NRF, there is a rule in the universities coming from also the department that they have to publish. Otherwise, then the department do not receive funding for that unless upgrade a certain number of publications. How do we go about that when we want to pay that? Because that's a very important question even for us in science and technology with the TIA coming in. Because TIA coming in, that's exactly going to be a challenge for us. And we need also your wisdom and the wisdom of all the committees, by the way. Thank you.
Another question, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two or three points. Wasn't very clear to me whether the issues of going backwards, making part of these clauses retrospective, has that issue been effectively taken into account? Is, in fact, how far would international agreements and legislation now cover that aspect? And the second is, how would you determine the community with respect of ownership to something?
Yeah, I'll hand over to the department, but before that, I'm sure after you respond, Honorable Chair, first will come on with some closing remarks. But to say that for me this amendment is long overdue. And we still have to catch up, you know, and move faster to protect even the victims of indigenous poaching. It's one of the questions that has come up because these things have happened and it is for us to catch up. Most of my questions have been asked and have been answered. There's only one concern on terminology. When I read somewhere, I find the holder of the IK, but somewhere else I find the co-ownership. So that's why in the matter of policy, because if you read it literally, you're holding something, but if you own it, then you own it. So we should have something definite there. But maybe your explanation will give some clarity. Thanks. Over to you.
Thank you,
Chair.
I'm dealing with the issue of the jurisdiction of this bill. Yes, we agree that Parliament legislates only in its own territory. You legislate only in your own country. But that law is true that it may have repercussions outside. That we concede. We need to manage that. So it doesn't apply to Zimbabwe, it applies here. But just in passing,
there is this recognition that South Africa has got neighbors. People may go even beyond transboundary issues. In the area of the Hoodia plant is a good example. It was a bad case in a sense that the government institution maybe didn't want to share, and the court has to pronounce on it. That one aside, the good part of it is that the Khoisan exists in South Africa, Namibia, Zambia, and Botswana, and a trust was formed for the Khoisan community. So I'm also dealing with how do you define a community. But in terms of that agreement, for the purposes of benefit sharing from the ODR, whatever is patent derived from the ODR, here is a community which even goes trans boundaries. So seemingly we are also encouraging in the policy that there should be a regional coordination on this matter, since we go beyond the boundaries. Can I leave the matter there? So there are disputes in many countries. In Russia, there are Assami people. I never knew that there are indigenous people in Russia, white people, Assami. They are in Finland, they are in Sweden, and the like. They are fighting about they are the community, defined as cross boundaries and the like. So it's difficult. We need to have dispute resolution mechanism, not necessarily the court, because we are dealing with the indigent, the poor people. They don't have money. So the structures, I'm also addressing the structures which can be put in place. So that's as far as I can go. So there is also this protection. When we talk about protection in intellectual property, we are saying, go out there. There is an office known as Companies and Intellectual Property Registration Office. Go and make a claim to say, this is mine. Let it be registered under your name. Your car is registered. Your house is under your name. So go out there and in the office to say, the deed registry properties, go and claim that this is mine. So this community should, as a collective, they may have a trust in any company, business enterprise, and say, this is the institution which will manage our property, in this sense, this intellectual property. They may register that intellectual property. So intellectual property generally is territorial. We have to register here in South Africa, the same thing. Go to another country and register. We have 190 or 200 countries in the world. Where you have a market, go and register to those countries. So when we talk about protection, we're talking about protection in that sense. Register so that we know whatever flows, like royalties, they should go to a particular person. And that is the protection we're talking about. And then, as for now, if a trademark is infringed, people go to court to protect themselves. If there is a counterfeiting of trademarks and the like, we have the police, we have the inspectorate within the DTI, SAR, they deal with that matter. So because this thing is under the intellectual property regime, when there is a problem of somebody misleading to say, this is my property, this is rooibos as an example, whereas it is not rooibos, the enforcement agencies should deal with that. I'm just indicating how protection we understand from this project. And then in the area of patents, I indicated that if we find out that actually you use the knowledge of that community, you worked with that community, and after getting the patent, you ran away, we can invalidate that patent in terms of the Patent Amendment Act. It's one of the penalties which it was asked there, it's a recall. We can invalidate that. It is happening in Spain and Portugal, and Portugal is voluntary, or in the EU, is voluntary to come out with, to disclose the genetic resources. And then if it is found, they don't punish you. They may claim some compensation and the like. But in South Africa, we are drastic. I'm just trying to talk in generalities. The issue of medicine. You have a patent. You first have a patent. And then later, you go to the Department of Health, whoever got the medical regulatory authority, the former MCC, whatever. There you do clinical trials. Because that patent of yours may be good, but when it goes to clinical trials, it may be poisonous to people. That's why for 3 years or whatever you do clinical trials, and then later government say, I have a duty to protect the my citizens, and therefore later they can say, you have passed the test. So therefore, that coordination again is coming to say, work with the other department, we are dealing with intellectual property. But here is a bad example that once happened long time ago, that one, a patent was still in existence. And then in the MCC regime, they were already allowing the generic companies to develop medicine, whereas the patent was still in existence. It was a few infringement, because the exclusive rights were infringed. So therefore, that coordination of saying, we are running one government, let's come with a policy and talk one language. I think that's all what we're saying. But the DVG will deal with the issue of retrospectivity. Should I touch on it? She will, yeah. Generally, is that our law does not allow us to go backwards, the retrospectivity. We are only allowed to go backwards if I'm giving you a benefit. Like if I say, all of you, you will have a bonuses from 1956. Parliament can do that. Where it will get money, we don't know. That it can do. But where you will prejudice right going forward, we are not allowed to go backward. So even here, we are not going to go backward per se. But let me say in passing, because of awareness, people may say, oh, that design which was stolen in Rhodes, actually, it was mine, a public interest issue. Somebody can go to court to say, I can prove that you have done this, and then they go to court. If they have money, the court may rule otherwise and say, please benefit this person backwards. That's all what I can say. On the issue of defining a community, really, some people claim that they are not related. But if there are researches and everything, it can prove that really we are related. But where there is a money issue, you may find that people are saying, no, I'm not related to so and so and the like. It is happening in the Nhlapo Commission. If you go there, I don't want to go through that, but it can be proven generally to say, you are related to that one. Maybe when there was this issue of separation, you were deposited that side and that. But really, yeah, if I may stop there. Which one? Yeah, the traditional healers, traditional healers, they are also running an institution that is recognized in terms of our laws. We need really to call that right. And then we are seeing some of the institutions here, maybe some business enterprises like trust for the community, but some community maybe are still fighting with their chiefs and the like, but we need cooperation in order to have one consultation, not to consult 16 million people individually, but to go to an institution where there is a cooperation and we say it represents the community, and then we take the matter forward. In terms of the bill, we are talking about the policy. There can be a formation of business enterprises like cooperatives. Cooperatives can be formed for the community as a whole, and we take the process forward. Maybe the city. So co-ownership is by the community. We own it jointly, and several is owned by that community. But here is an issue. Where we may find, I don't know how it will be calibrated or calculated, where we may find that I only ask maybe a small portion of what is owned by the community, say the fourth floor. I may say, I can give you a lump sum, 10,000, or build a school or clinic, but this is intellectual property, this is by product. Really a lot of effort was done by an outsider, an individual. But where we find that in medicines in particular, people, pharmaceutical companies are just putting color, and then later they say it is their patent, whereas in reality there was no value addition except to put color. And therefore I think the Khoisan should be the co-owner of those intellectual property or patents coming from the Hoodia plant as an example. So that's how I can go. Thanks.
So with the permission, if I can just close on this round in terms of our response. I think it's going to be useful for us obviously to engage again on this, because I think as we speak about some of the concepts and principles in the policy, I think people do not have a sense of what is in the proposed bill, which would then talk to some of these things. Some of the mechanisms that I think Honourable, I think it's Smith, was talking to, I think that we are addressing in the draft legislation itself. But I think the issue of protection is very important in the sense that protection is that ability for you to be in a position to say, if this is mine and if you do something to it, I can do this. At the moment, what you have is that there is no protection whatsoever. And the only protection that you have, in a sense, is you rely on the mercy of people. What we're saying is that people should not, communities should not be made to rely on the goodwill and the, you know, people being friendly and charities and, you know, giving them something because they're doing them a favor. We're saying that there must be a system where they would have their knowledge on the database, which is central, which the IP offices could also bounce any application for registrations against. And as we speak right now, in other countries, although they don't even have the law that protects traditional knowledge, their court system is even more progressive. They use the common law to protect it still. The courts, for instance, in New Zealand, when you go to their IP office to register a trademark or patent, they will check it against the database that is held by a council for the Maori nation there. They will still check it like that, although it's not even in the legislation and project, but because of that recognition aspect, they will still do it. So what we are saying in this policy is that we've explored all of that, and we're saying that there are various ways that we can actually ensure that this kind of protection can be afforded to these communities. And let's explore them and see if these things in the legislation, they are actually expressed in the manner that will be implementable, that will be practical, that will also be user-friendly, because we also want those communities to be in a position to utilize this law. We don't just want it to be a law on paper. But just, I think, lastly, the aspect that you alluded to of retrospectivity, I think it links up directly with the point that Honourable Smith also raised in terms of, I think, when I alluded to the fact that when policy dictates certain interventions, we need to be in a position to allow the law then to be adjusted to talk to that. But at all times, when we propose legislation to Parliament, we ensure that we check whether the legislation will be in line with the international obligations that we have as a country. And in this particular case, we've alluded to in our presentation that this particular proposal that we're making is in line with those requirements. And you'll see now in the further details that we are not seeking to change the definitions of copyright or definitions of patents, but we're using the very same system to then afford the relevant protection that we're seeking to afford to these communities and people. But also, this should not be looked as we make examples about rainbows, about Hoodia, those are things that went wrong. We are sharing them as examples so that people can see these are the kinds of things that we're talking about. But we are not saying that this law is going to then go back and try to afford protection retrospectively. We are making the law to ensure that
as these communities, because communities are there every day, we're living, people are coming up with things, we're saying that let that kind of protection be afforded on an ongoing basis going forward, so that people do not then find themselves in the same situation with the hoodie plants and the ray bottles. Thank you.
Thanks. Before I hand over to Honourable Fett, in the future, okay.
Just realize that we may not have responded to Honourable Ngobo's concern around the, you know, just balancing, you know, the publication, the registration of patents and all of that. Yeah, certainly we're talking about people that are very sophisticated who are professors who should know better. That as much as you there's an incentive for you to publish, it doesn't mean you should publish unauthorized work. But I think what this is pointing out to us is that certainly if you have your right protected because you've registered it, then if the professor publishes it, then he will be violating a right. Right now he can go and speak to the communities and disclose what the communities had never intended to disclose. But because those communities have not protected that, there is no redress for them. So that is what that is bringing up. But we are saying that, yes, there's a need for us to ensure coherence in our laws and requirements, but as we go, I think, in terms of in Parliament, as we assist, you know, Parliament to also come up with this legislation. That's one thing as government departments, we need to always ensure that our laws are talking to each other, our requirements are talking to each other, and we are successfully doing that in some areas, and we hope to just better that aspect. Thank you.
Thanks very much. I was saying when you come back for the briefing, you'll also tap into what was raised by Honourable Mujumi, the issue of redress in the other form. If a person has been aggrieved or there's been this poaching, it should be a criminal offence. How would people then move forward on that issue? Taking into account that justice is expensive. Now we're talking about rural people who must go to court and say, hey, this was our idea, this was our thing, and we would need to assist those communities. But from my side, thanks very much also to Honourable Mogo and members of that committee for attending. That we'll always advise that we have this joint meeting, not only as a cost-effective exercise, but just to share knowledge, because we'll get different knowledge. Over to you, Honourable.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Gamedi. I think what's become a lot clearer to all of us in the department briefing us on really at this stage very much an introductory level for many of us here, what has become apparent in the same way when one studies is the more you learn, the more you know nothing, that you have so much more to learn and understand about an issue. And what this has shown us, I'm sure all of us sitting here, is that we have so many more questions and there are so many more issues that we may not have been aware of before this engagement on the policy brief. I must say, Co-Chair, what occurred to me are just three or four issues that this piece of legislation, this very critical amendment, goes to the root of redressing much of what has happened in Africa, and particularly South Africa. We often so often think purely on an economic front, on a political front, of the vote and the economy, but a nation is founded on its people and culture. And what is at the heart of this matter when we talk of indigenous knowledge is not simply an economic reality, but it goes to the very heart of a culture, of a society, and a nation. And I think there's much we can learn from the West in this regard. Europe has taken this very seriously. One only has to read a little bit about the French to have a clear understanding of how important this issue is. And at the other end of the world, to go to China. China, for all its political differences with certain countries in the West, it shares this issue of the importance of indigenous knowledge and intellectual property rights. But here in South Africa, this has very much been the Cinderella of our legislation. And I must say, perhaps I have been part of that recalcitrance and recognizing the importance, because many years ago when this came up, I think in 1999, it's listed here and before, the provinces were brought in to engage. And that was not a priority of our NCOP engagements. So I think it is a lesson that I hope today we've learnt. I'm also welcome the point about proactive protection. And we learn that it is a little country like New Zealand who's listed as an example of such proactive protection. New Zealand. The other issue, I think, is the point of arts and culture and the cross-border nature, not simply in Africa, but you mentioned Russia, Asia, and the like, the need to take into account communities that cut across boundaries and so on with indigenous knowledge. And yet another point is, of course, on the one hand, we're striving for scientific progress. And yet again, while we have much of the knowledge and a lot of the technology, we're affording limited protection at this moment in time. Will we not also lose it all as we forget what we should be protecting? So, as I said earlier, I do think that all the chairs here, arts and culture, I hear, and I don't even want to go down that street because the moment I open my mouth, I acknowledge my ignorance, which is rather embarrassing. So I certainly would hope that these three or four areas and portfolios and select committees, ranging from science and technology to arts and culture, trade in between, international relations, but we may forget agriculture. There's so many, many other functions, portfolios, and policies and mandates in our country and department that are involved in this. So rather than make a clear cutting statement now as to how we will proceed and how we will go forward, let me say that we are certainly seriously considering holding an additional briefing, but with people from agriculture as well, and perhaps a longer time period, and breaking it up into sessions of where we have a focus, if you like, on some of the arts and culture with chairperson chairing that, science and technology and the like. So we will have to engage in our respective committees. One of my own, our own members in trade and industry made us aware of the issues of labour, workers involved in this. So it's far broader than we may have realised last year when we saw this legislation was coming up again. So we will be holding public hearings, and we would certainly encourage all committees to, through the committee secretaries, to liaise along and see who we should be inviting and broadening that list, and possibly on a Friday, which is one of these dangerous days because the airport takes over priority, we may have to agree to meet for 7 hours, 6 hours, and really fresh this out. So let me leave it there. I would rather engage on a one-to-one with respective chairs and whips and also the multi-party situation as well. But I would like to thank everyone who participated, and certainly the departments who came here today, and particularly the co-chair of the morning session here, the Honourable Gamedi. Thank you all very much. We're now going to proceed with portfolio committee work on trade and industry. So this is not a break, certainly not a break. It will be an opportunity to request members of that portfolio to come up closer. I'm not a pastor and this is not a church, so come a lot closer. Let's just go straight into the minutes. I'm just looking at the quorum, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We're fortunate in having our quorum as we move forward. I take it everyone has got the edited minutes. Am I correct? Yeah. So we've had a chance to study them. I would just appeal to members to check the spelling of their names and whether they were present or not present, and is it correctly reflected. In future, you will be asked to sign the register and not simply be ticked, and that's going to be brought to the meeting as from next week. But please check this now and correct it if necessary. Page 1 of the 28th of January. Page 1. Unless I see a hand, I move. Page 2. And in future, please, can we have pages inserted? Page 2. Yes, Honourable Mabasa?
On page 2, I have not had a chance of comparing the version, the latest version, but if it's already corrected, it will not be indicated. 1.3.3, it looks like, I will be adding something. I don't know whether I'm still right if I do that. Even if, in a reasonable period after the meeting, you know, something to that effect. I know I'm not using the right English right now to add, but at the end of the sentence, so that you know, but that's what I'm proposing. Let me pass. And then on 1.3.7, the last sentence there, failure to comply, will force the committee to consider issuing failure to comply. Then the last one on the same page, 1.3.8. After exercising it, to add an S, it's so that it becomes its oversight. Thanks on that page, correction.
May I just remind you, we do have edited minutes in front of us now, and I think I appreciated the point you made, Honourable Mabasa, unless otherwise edited. It has been edited.
It has been, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
What that, although I've just pointed out to the secretary, there are three words missing from what was edited under 1.3.3. It should be responded to in writing within 2 days unless otherwise requested. Because you will recall we were referring in particular to departments, and someone raised the issue of what about others who come in, and we said, well, obviously the chair would say a week or 2 weeks or whatever. So it should be unless otherwise requested. The others that were referred to by the Honourable Mabasa have been carried out, or they have been in fact rephrased. I'm sure if you look at the latest. Are there any other on page 2, which ends with 2.1.2? Yes, Honourable Ntikalana.
Thanks, Ted. I'm just looking at the end of 1.3.10. It says, therefore, affording the committee to input on government development of new policy. Wouldn't it be appropriate to say policies? Is that my uneasiness? Since there'll be only one policy.
I think the point you're making is plural. Mm-hmm. So let's simply capture the plurality of it. Page 3. Remember, yes, on the Mabasa.
On page 3, at that 2.2.3, I tend to think that it should be replaced by a word that goes at the end of 2.2.2, because that agreed to relates only to 2.2.2. Something to the effect of the meeting agreed. But as part of 2.2.2, because when it stands there, it means it is speaking to the whole paragraph. Whereas the correct thing is that the agreed must only relate to 2.2.2.
I think the point you are making is that what was agreed to relates to 2.2.2, and that the agreement shouldn't be numbered. It can just be a bullet under 2.2.2, because it's relating specifically to one clause. Isn't that the point you are making? So instead of giving a number, if we give a bullet, the bullet will signify that that applies to the number immediately preceding. Right. Point taken. Honourable Ntikalana.
Chair, just on 2.4.2.3, it reads, due to the parliamentary programme, such informal meetings are necessary. Now, if we look at 2.4.2.2, it only refers to meetings. I know we discussed a lot that day. All I just wanted to check is that were we referring to meetings generally, or were we referring to informal meetings specifically? If we could help one another, because I think it's important that we actually clarify the character of the meetings, whether they were just meetings generally or they were specifically informal meetings.
I may just my own recollection of that is I raised the issue myself and spoke about an informal meeting with respect to different companies that, that had asked to engage with me informally, and referred in particular to one, Xstrata. So that, it was something I specifically raised with respect to an informal request from a company. We do get formal requests that come to the committee secretary requesting to meet with the committee, requesting to make a submission. So my own recollection was that the word such would have referred to what had earlier on been stated, and the fact that it was informal. As soon as we have a formal meeting, it would have to be governed by the rules of Parliament pertaining to committee meetings, you see, as I understand it. That is why it's stated clearly informal. Right. If we can move to page 4. Honourable.
I may have misunderstood part of the intention of Honourable Ntikelana's point, but on the same 2.4.2.2, I understood him to be proposing that it should be a plural meetings. Oh, no, sorry, my point falls off. I'm reading the wrong one, no, sorry. I'm covered already.
No, I'm glad that minutes are being taken seriously, because we may forget they are a legal record. And later on they are referred to, and we would have passed them. So it's a good sign that everyone is alert. Thank you very much. I appreciate it myself. Page 4. Sorry, Honourable Mabasa.
On 2.4.3.6, it is also that we do away with 2.4.3.7, because that agreed to relates to 3.6.
Thank you very much. That's fine. And I think what should be just one point here is, in the past we've used the word deliberation somewhat loosely, and I have requested the committee secretary only to use that word when in fact we are deliberating. We weren't deliberating today, for example. We were simply engaging with the department. Sometimes we may be considering something, but deliberation is a very, very clear purpose whose objective is an immediate decision at that point or soon thereafter. So I think the committee secretary is taking on board the issue of when we say agreed, what is it agreed to, and so on and so forth. The other small stylistic point may be to just look at the little bit of the numbering, see how we can improve on it a little bit better, but that is the stylistic approach. Can we have someone to propose with those, I'm now noting them, 1, 2, 3, 4 amendments. In fact, in some ways they are technical amendments, but they are required to be made. So can we propose adoption? Thanks, Honourable Lavinia. Thank you, Honourable Khadebe. Fine. The next set of minutes, Friday the 29th, page 1. Let's make sure all these minutes are numbered in future. Right, page 1. You know, there was a meeting at which I was present, which surprises me it didn't happen right here, in which we actually still sent our good wishes for a speedy recovery to the Honourable Marais. And I don't see this at all reflected. Somewhere along the line it should have been reflected. It may not have been done at the first meeting, but it certainly was done by the second meeting. You know? Yeah. Okay, so we must just note that. Thank you. Page 1 of the 29th. Page 2. Yes, Honourable Njikalana.
Chair, there were... Yes, in page 2. There were specific requests made to the Family Policy Institute to give us additional information, and I don't see that reflected.
I think that we need to note that under engage right at the end of it, and that the Family Policy Institute was requested to respond in writing, and can you, the analysis that they had actually done, if you recall, certain analysis that was not, you know, present at the submission. And the second thing is the fresh study that they hope to embark on, you may recall, with respect to this issue, because they indicated that they were there, although they were primarily involved in another side of youth, children, women, vulnerable, they nevertheless came there, but that they wished to set up, or rather establish, or launch a study on the sociopathologies or the impact on society on gambling and the family. So those were the two. The analysis that was left out, the report, which they promised to submit to us in writing, and also in due course brief us on the results of their study or findings. Yes. Thank you, Honourable Van der Westhuizen.
Chairperson, also paragraph 2.3, I don't think what is there is grammatically incorrect, but for a non-English speaker like myself, to say that the economic benefits are outweighed by the socio-economic costs, it almost creates the impression that the economic benefits are greater than the socio-economic costs. Are outweighed, I think, puts it so that it is technically correct as it stands there, but it is a bit misleading for somebody that's not that au fait with the grammar, etc.
Honourable Van der Westhuizen, if you read their submission, it's clearly stated that the economic benefits are far greater. That's why we asked for the report. Do you remember? We asked for the report, the written report in that regard. So it was not our statement as such, but I think they were strongly of that view. That's why we asked for the written submission.
Sorry, Chair, perhaps I didn't put it clearly. It's just if you say something is outweighed or something outweighs something else, it has got contradictory meaning. Okay. And that is just where I believe that one can perhaps use a clearer language to say that it is greater than or...
I use their own words. They use the words greater than. So let's just correct that. Eh? I think the rest of that page, which is page 2, is it? Um, closure. Now, from what I can understand, we have a substantive, one substantive term, grammatical cleanup there, 2.3. I'm not aware of another one. Am I correct? Fanny, that one. So who, can we have someone to propose the adoption with that amendment? Thank you. We've got the, on the one hand, the Honourable Kamala, followed by as the support of the Honourable Vandervest Chasen. I will not comment on these minutes. I will simply take us through this particular committee meeting was chaired by the committee whip, the Honourable Khadebe, perhaps you will remember. Is that not correct, Honourable Khadebe? So anything substantive, I'm sure you will clean up for us, or you will offer your comment on page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4.
Okay, that is now the page with paragraph 5.
Yes, no. It's page 1. It's, you could be right, 2, 3, 4. We're not on page 5 yet, but we're coming, page 5. Atlantis report back is on that page. Yes, Honourable Lyon?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, on page 5, bullet point 5.3.1. I don't think it's the true reflection of what transpired in the meeting. It, I should think it must say that frustration was the limited progress of 18 September 2009, and there must be a bullet, because that was what the people from Atlantis expressed. And the second part of that same sentence, the closure of two community-driven factories, must be a bullet on its own. Thank you. And on 5.5, I think 5.5 and 5.9 must be one sentence, and there were 5.9, and but they must give more detail about the training that CIPRO and CIDA said they were giving them, so that we can hold them accountable to that. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just before I take the Honourable Njikalana, I think. This is also chaired by the whip, Honourable Khadebe, so I'm sure, looking at him, you were chairing at that time, you would go along with that, would you?
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, on the issue of 5.3.1, also those were not community-driven factories, they're just factories that closed.
Oh.
The factories were closed, not community-driven factories, no. Yeah. I think community-driven must be scrapped off, ne? That there was a closure of two factories, that was it. Yeah, in that community.
There is an agreement on that one, and what about the linkage then on 5.5 with 5.9, as which, you know, as I said, not being there, it would, I can't comment. 5 linked to 5.9.
When coming to the issue of 5.9, it was the, what can I say? It was just a list of the people who were involved with what's the thing? With that forum. Yeah, at that forum. They provided that list, didn't they?
Well, I want to suggest, I think that, certainly I would agree, but I think the point that perhaps the Honourable Lyon is making, and I really don't have a serious issue with it, I think it would go well together simply the DTI informed that, and then you follow it up with another sentence which simply says 182 entrepreneurs are on the books. You know, it just links the same idea. So I think that's what you were requesting. So it's not so much a substantive, but a stylistic and making sense of everything. So let's move with that one. But can we then come back to the Honourable Njikalana?
Just on this point here, because I had already picked it up myself. In fact, when I looked at 5.5, I scribbled on top of many companies. I said two cooperatives, and all of a sudden, when I was reading 5.6, I realized that actually two cooperatives are being mentioned, because I know, I mean, I was uneasy about the phrase, many companies, because the report from CEDA and the cooperatives unit had exact numbers. At no stage in time did those agencies and PTI give generic, you know, terms. They had exact numbers. And we must also remember, honorable members, they gave us written reports, even if it was PowerPoint. So that can be corrected. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, I think 5.5, 5.6, and 5.9 must be combined. There are two trends that are coming there. One is the registration of companies, whatever they have been registered. I remember there was a gentleman from CIPRO, he actually indicated that two cooperatives were registered. There could have been other numbers that were registered. The other trend was that CEDA did articulate how many entrepreneurs did they interact with. There was, in total, I think that 80, and they even gave a breakdown that for a specific workshop, so many went to that workshop. I remember there was one on tendering skills, which was for building contractors, just as an example. I think the restructuring could go on those lines. The other thing is that it would be helpful at the top, particularly 5.1, to say, actually, the delegation was from the Atlantis Community Development Forum. They did indicate where they came from. Atlantis Community Development Forum. And another area is 5.3.5. I'm looking at everybody. I think 5.3.5 was actually prevented by DTI, or one of its agencies in particular. I don't remember that the short courses were articulated by the delegation from the forum. My last point here is that nothing is recorded about the cooperative unit. And Mr. Jason Dumo actually did take a couple of minutes indicating what he had done. In fact, if you remember, he was the first one, even before CEDA, to make a presentation, and I think it would be quite accurate to actually, you know, indicate what he has done. And fortunately, as I say, yes, you know, each and every one of them has a written or some PowerPoint presentation. So, you know, those points can be drawn from those written presentations. Thanks, sir.
Honourable Lyon.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, on 5.3.5. I think the spokesperson from the Atlantis, he just mentioned that there were sessions with EIS, with CEDA and CIPRO. He didn't mention that they attended courses. And when CEDA and CIPRO reported, they indicated that the courses that were attended and all those things. Thanks.
What I'd like to do is this at this point, because there are quite a lot of substantive corrections on here and amendments. Yes, Honourable Sadebe.
All right, thank you, Chair. On that point of 5.3.5, it was not short courses, it was meetings. Because that's what they raised. You know, they said that you just attend meetings and then they have to get something like a certificate after that, so they're not progressing. It was meetings in that.
Honourable Ntikalana, if you could just turn off the mic.
Sorry.
I want to request You see, we had no problem with 1 and 2, on certainly on what my own notes reflect here, and page 3 and page 4. But when we got to 5 and 6, with, you know, because we've referred there as well, there are quite a few serious substantive changes here. And there have been requests from committee members that the secretariat takes into account the PowerPoints and the this and the that. So I don't want us to pass this with amendments. I would like this to be brought back to the committee. Right. So that is the 2nd of February. Will be brought back next meeting. That's fine. And then if you would just, as a final check on it, liaise with Honourable Khadebe, just as final clarification, and Honourable Line and Honourable Njikalana, just to make sure we've captured it as it should. Thank you. Are they all stapled together or something? Yeah. All right. I see here is another set. Oh, the 3rd. The 3rd of February. My apologies. That's also a meeting on the Wednesday in our regular day. I have been just noticing that on some of these regular days, we need to ensure that our full-time members can be there unless there is a medical reason why they can't, or there is some serious political reason. Right, the 3rd of February, page 1. Page 2. It's actually stapled to the previous set of minutes. I made the same mistake, Honourable Levine. Honourable Mabasa?
On page 2, Comrade Chair, although it's not a serious issue yet, but on 2.3.1, I suggest that we make capital the R for the regulator and the A for the administrator, because, you know, they are emphatic to 2.3.1. They are taking the nature of nouns. But let me stop there, yes. Regulator and administrator.
I'm not sure I understand the proposal you're making. How would you like that bullet to read, or that?
It's just that on 2.3.1, regulator, the R should be a capital one, and administrator, the A, should be a capital, because they are nouns, I think I. But let me stop there.
It's not a proper name. You see, if we were to call it National Regulator, we would capitalize it. But it would be the equivalent of saying the D is something, B bank, whatever agency is now a bank. We wouldn't need to. So at this point, we'd want to leave it as it stands at the moment. But if we can just move across to the next page then, please. Oh, yes, sorry, Honourable Khadebe.
All right, before we go to the next page, on the issue of opening and welcome, that's why we concluded that we must send the cards to Mr. Mare and Ms. Bab. That it was concretized there. Yeah, it must appear there that it was the decision of the committee was taken to send get well wishes card for Ms. Fox and Mr. Murray.
After the minutes, I was going to take the opportunity of thanking the committee so that I don't confuse it within the minutes. But later, I've already raised the issue of Honourable Murray, and I think that that is not reflected here. That is the point of the whip.
Correct for the second. We also had, we meant correct.
All right. Let us, whatever it is that has been requested, let us note as a true reflection of the minutes. Page 3. Right, I'm just checking, members, to make sure that at some point the DAs were earlier spelled out as distribution agencies in these minutes. Because I see here, let me just see, because we don't always do that. See, I'm looking weird. Over here on page 2. Yes. What about page 3 then? We had a hand there, Honorable Khadebe. We also had Honorable Mabasa for correction. Corrections then, Honorable Khadebe?
Well, thank you, Chair. I think that when we're closing on page 3, input from the GTI, then on the committee forecast, I think that there must be 3.4.5. where we dealt with the issue of the time frames of dealing with the problems of the time frames, where we said the CI must really come with the time frames in which they are going to sort out those problems of the national transport and the
very important, the time frames. So that should certainly be amended and added in. Honorable Mabasa?
A suggested typo on 3.4, the committees, because should come before the S, because we're talking of a singular committee deliberations.
At one with the apostrophe inside the S. I'm not sure which copy you're looking at.
Okay, then.
Yeah, so I think it has been correctly captured. Look, members, I think there was only one substantive correction there. Am I correct on that set of minutes? And so therefore we can adopt that with today with one amendment. So can we have someone to propose adoption? Thank you, Honourable Lyne. Seconded by? Right, Honourable van der Westhuizen. Right, okay. Now, that leaves us only one outstanding set of minutes, which I think is now extremely useful as we move on then to the end of the minutes and just consider the next item. But what I do wish to say now that the minutes have been dealt with, at the end of the first week in which the card was sent, I hadn't yet received it, but I did receive it subsequent to that because, sometimes the facilities in the suburbs are not as fast as they are in Parliament. So I'd like to, at this point, really thank the committee and also place it on record that the whip of the committee was regularly in contact with me, and that certainly was a great boost to getting better soon, as was the DA on regular occasions, and the IFP, and of course members of the ANC. So we do appreciate that, and I do appreciate the whip taking over so effectively and chairing the committees that I was not present in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also on behalf of Member Kubus Marais, he sent me an SMS to say thank you very much for the committee, for a beautiful card, prachtige kaartje, as they word it, and he will hopefully be joining us tomorrow in the House. Not for the full day, but hopefully for the full session tomorrow afternoon. Thank you.
May we please tell him we're looking forward to his reappearance here, and his contribution is always appreciated and constructive in the committee. Thank you very much. Members, we then move...
Chair, can I be excused, please? I have another appointment at 1 o'clock.
Yes, it is just one. Well, we have dealt with what has to be adopted, and I think that is the important issue. Thank you for waiting for that point. Appreciate it. But members, just one of our members indicated they did not have the program yesterday or the day before, the last program. Now, I'm not sure, I know that was the Honourable Lyon who mentioned that to me, or was it the Honourable Kamalo who mentioned it? Has everyone got the program?
Chairperson, in mentioning that I don't have, it did not mean that I did not receive it. It might be mixed with my documents in the office. So I don't say it is totally not with my documents.
Right. I would like everyone to have it. This is the one that has been approved until June. So some of you have asked me, are there certain late Fridays? As we currently sit here, the late Friday will be the 26th, and it's very late. Is it the 26th? No, that only goes on till midday. It's not even the 5th. It's the 19th of March. I'm asking members now to appeal to their political parties and their caucuses here to allow them and enable them to attend that. Otherwise, we do have to schedule a Saturday. We're not. That is the choice we've been given. So it is so important that we complete the strategic plan after getting all the information. So it's an earnest appeal to every member sitting here to make travel flight plans after 9 o'clock that night or the next morning. It's really an appeal. Otherwise, it means staying here Saturday or coming on a Monday, which most of us have constituency work to deal with. So let's try and approach it that way. We now, according to the program this morning, have a formal consideration of the draft report on the annual report of the DTI and entities. I am approaching all of you on this. We've had this for some time. Members of respective parties have had the opportunity to make input. I'm not sure if you received any inputs. I'm told we only received an input from Honourable Moray to the committee secretary. So can we make a start on this, at least? Everyone happy on that approach? Let's start on it. I mean, we've got to pass it soon. Page one. This is the deliberations and formal consideration of the draft report on the annual report of DTI and entities. Right. Page one. We're looking now for substantive input. Page two. Anything stylistic can come to the chair directly. Page two. Page three. Page four. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 12. Page 13. Page 14. Page 15. Page 16. Page 17. Page 18. Page 19. Page 20. Page 21. Page 22. Page 23, let's just go through that. It talks about 10.2 key issues. Wholesale model, SAMAS, defaulting borrowers, DFI, SAMAS again. Impairment provisions, SAMAS, funding. Audit opinion, cooperative, performance, employees. Page 24, the Export Credit Insurance Corporation. It's quite a serious one, especially if you begin to look at some of the ratifications, treaties coming up and so on. I would like members to really take a strong and careful look at that. Key issues again down there, 24. One thing I want to raise, which is on this page, and I'll just note it now and raise it at the end. Page 26. And you will see there, right at the end, under recommendations, we do have some already made as requested by the DA. You remember we asked all parties if they wanted to put anything in writing, they could do so. I'd like us just to go back to page 25. And I noticed in two or three areas, but this is an example. The first paragraph, where we're dealing with the bilateral investment treaty policy framework. Bilateral investment treaties. That's. You'll see the last sentence in that paragraph says, this committee dealt with BITs, okay, and were guided by the experts from these institutions. I would hope that in taking our decisions, we receive our own advice, what happens from the experts of these government institutions, we just leaving at this point, is they give us briefings. They may be guiding the minister. So I think that we need to be a little bit more cautious about who's guiding this committee. You know? If we do want to be guided by the experts of DTI, I'm not sure how we will be exercising any oversight later. Yes, Honourable. I mean, is that yourself then, Ms. Irving?
The statement is not referring to our committee, it's a committee in the ECIC. So we can just add the committee's full name there.
It's almost our committee there making such bold statements. There were one or two other places where I did see a reference to not only experts but advisors. Could we just check against that? We're not passing it now, but I just wanted to ensure one thing. We're considering, we're not adopting. I would like anyone here now to raise a recommendation, and if they can't raise it now, to raise it in writing, today or tomorrow morning. I think that's fair enough. When I say tomorrow morning, certainly so that we've captured it by the afternoon. So if there's anyone who wants to raise a recommendation now, raise your hand. If not, you'll have the opportunity to do so tomorrow morning. Are we understood on that point? Right. In that case, we would like at this point to just also indicate, is this the long report that's going to be going through? You will remember that as the chairperson with the secretariat, I said we're not publishing 27 pages, because I'm not sure who's going to read it. And I just don't want to publish anything on the ACC. I do think it should be there, and it will be there. But I think as far as this committee is concerned, we would like an executive summary of 5 pages, almost. 5 to 7, and I want that adopted by this committee. But the whole thing will go in, as I think this is a valuable resource document. But can we have a proposal? I've made the proposal. Do we have a seconder on that approach of taking this document down to 7 or 8 pages? Thank you. Right, and we'll circulate that before we are going to adopt. Thank you to Ms. Hurling for her sterling work in this regard, the researcher who contributed, and the committee secretary who brought it with Ms. Hurling into one document. Thank you very much. Honourable Njikalana.
Along with concluding remarks, I honestly was expecting a little bit more on that, because I think in the various sections there was quite a couple of things that we raised which could be nicely captured around concluding remarks. I mean, one of the good examples is actually the bilateral investment treasury policy framework. I remember that there was even a task team that was established to actually take that matter further so that we can, address ourselves more in depth on that. I'm just using it as an example, and that I really would plead that very, very, very much, obviously, in the various sectors of this report, there are things that we may have raised, whether it's in international trade, is in the BE section, this and that, and even the cooperatives as well. You know, quite a number of substantive things were raised, and to me, they befit to, even if it's in general terms, to appear under concluding remarks, because that's where the impact is, whether it's for the Speaker's Office to consider, or even for DTI, or even for the public to consider, because this is where they can say, this is the gist of what we need, or what we are concluding that we'll be driving at the end of the day. Thanks very much.
Yes, that's the sort of thing we'd like in writing to the committee secretary, so it can be captured. Just send an email and send it to the chair, copy it to the whip, and send it along to the committee secretary. So that is all put together. When we come here to adopt, we've all seen these documents. Are we agreed on that? So, at this point, I'm sorry we've run 15 minutes over. I apologize. And can we close this and adjourn this meeting until the next opportunity, which is Tuesday the 23rd. Some of you have agreed to go on an oversight, and you will be informed by telephone again, but I imagine you would want to meet here at Port Hope unless you're going in your own cars and make a direct arrangement with the committee secretary. So we won't go into that now. The committee secretary will send an SMS along. Please don't go advising these people directly that we're coming. We'd like to just see how things are, as most South Africans do. Thank you.